activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
By your command.
Felt a great disturbance in the Force.
Resistance is futile.
Who built a time machine? What about DeLorean?
Exterminate!
Silent Green is people!
I'll be back.
That sounds like something out of science fiction.
You live in a spaceship, dear.
I call to order this third meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Welcome, everybody. I'm your supreme leader, Dave Nelson. Joining me is our Emperor, Matt Stein. Also here is our Chancellor, Brad Ludwig, and the club's Viceroy, Anessa Moyens. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Birthday boy slash supreme leader.
I am extra special. I'm the supreme leader, and it's my birthday, so...
And you wouldn't let me bring cake.
No. No cake.
Disappointed.
No cupcakes. No any kind of confectionery at all to this show. It's banned.
I should have got a cupcake just out of spite.
You could have. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it, Nessa. Not a damn thing.
I ate cookies the last show, so there you go. Out of spite.
All right, before we get any further, let's introduce our guest geek. And I don't know if you saw my introduction, Glenn. I hope I got all this information right.
Yeah.
Because it came off your Wikipedia. I think you're the first guest with an actual Wikipedia. He's a former columnist for the San Francisco Examiner, Sports Illustrated for Kids, and many other national publications. He was one of the original contributing editors for Wired Magazine. From 1993 to 95, he co-hosted the nationally syndicated On Computers radio show with Leo Laporte. He's credited as both a writer and director on many of the episodes of the web-based video series Lonely Girl 15. He's also the former host of Shut Up and Play on the Twit Network. He's currently the director of marketing at twit.tv, where he's coming from. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Mr. Glenn Rubenstein.
Woo-hoo! Hey. Thanks for having me.
Welcome aboard, my friend. And we used to work together on Spreecast.com. We did shows over there, so that's how we know each other. And
glad I could make it.
All right. So this is basically a show where we talk about the week's science fiction news. And before we get into what's new, let's read the minutes from last week. Brad, what did we talk about last week?
Well, last week we talked about the John Scalzi Red Shirts book that may be turned into a TV miniseries. We talked about how Warner Brothers is making an animated film based on the Arkham-based video games, but without Kevin Conroy as the voice of Batman. Katie Sackhoff is in talks with Marvel Studios for an unspecified role in the movie universe. And we talked about how much science is enough science for science fiction. Oh, well, last but not least, Amazon has the rights for Barbarella and is working on a pilot episode.
Yeah, and we still don't know in what form that will take. Like, is that going to be?
No, we do not.
It could be a comedy. It could be a straight up like reimagining of the Barbarella series. Who knows?
I guess perhaps it could be an erotic sci-fi thriller, like Skinamax style.
Somebody needs.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, somebody needs to take. Does Cinemax still do the after dark kind of hard R movies?
Holy crap! Do they? They have some real gems. I'm sorry, I got really excited to talk about cable porn.
Yeah.
Holy crap, you guys have no idea. They have upped the budget.
It's weird that there's still a need in today's society for that. You know, I mean, you think with the internet and everything else, that Cinemax is still like, so we have a dedicated core niche and we need to do everything we can to cater. That's what we're known for. Sure, the other pay channels have gotten into, you know, they've made their game a little more artistic. Showtime is doing their original series. HBO is doing, even Stars is doing prestige series, but not Cinemax.
No,
just says we know what our bread and butter is, and that's TNA.
Kicking it old school. And you know what? Maybe it's for people that, you know, like cheese in their hard R movies and what shows. And also,
I don't want cheese in my hard R.
I think we got a title. And then there's the whole, you know, online blatant porn. So, you know, maybe it attracts people that aren't into that, you know, either of those, you know, possibly.
So you're saying that Cinemax makes high quality erotica.
Mexican MX, go.
I was flipping through, this must have been like 5 years ago, I was flipping through the channels late at night and came upon Cinemax and saw something that was on there, and I swear to God, the production values made a Sci-Fi Channel original movie look like freaking Titanic. I mean, it was so low rent and low budget. I wouldn't even say it looked a step above porn. I actually think most pornography these days, what Vivid Studios is doing, has much better production values than what I saw in Cinemax 5 years ago. So I can't even imagine where it's at. I think The Asylum, the people that make Mockbusters,
yes,
do prestige films compared to the production values of your average Cinemax production based on the last time I saw one.
Maybe they
what
should.
What the hell just happened here?
This is Glenn Rubenstein, my friends. So, he brings
so
an,
instead
an extra...
of Sharknado, they'd make what, Pornado on Cinemax?
They're not as overt. I mean, it'd be more like Sinado, or like a Storm of Temptation. It would have something that sounds like it tells you that it's a little porny, but it's also they're about as overt as the average romance novel your aunt would have read in 1984. You know,
so no lube NATO.
Yeah, no, I'm sure though. The porn titles.
That's an interesting genre that we should maybe look into a little bit, is the porn or hard R science fiction films or TV series. That's got to be a pretty interesting genre. We lost Glenn.
Wow.
Lost Glenn, too.
Well, I don't blame him. He's like, oh, okay.
I'm out.
That Brad guy came up with Lube NATO. I'm out.
All right, let's move on. So that's the minutes from last week. Any old business, anything you guys want to add? Well, I guess we did add to that one story, so that's good enough, right?
Kind of.
And last week, we were also excited about the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, which came out this week. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So stick around.
Yes, we are.
All right, new business time. This is the stories that made the news in science fiction this week. And I am up first. James Cameron gives an update on the Avatar sequels. Not one, not two, but three Avatar movies are being made. They're being released December 2016. December 2017, and December 2018. And he recently spoke to, I'm not sure who originally interviewed him, but this was published on Collider.com. And he basically said that they're developing the software while he works on the scripts and designs all the new creatures and environments. He added that he hasn't decided whether he'll shoot all or just some of the film in high frame rate. Cameron was quoted as saying, "We're designing all the creatures and characters and the settings and so on. So I'm not actually directing yet, but I'm doing all the other creative processes that lead up to that." He says, "You'll see new worlds, new habitats, new cultures. The primary conflict between the human view kind of dominating nature and the Na'vi view of being integrated into nature is the same, but it manifests in various other ways." So far, Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, and Stephen Lang also all on board for returning to the Avatar sequels. Welcome back, Glenn.
Thank you. Twit Wi-Fi.
So we were talking about the Avatar sequels, not one, not two, but three of them for 2016, 2017, and 2018. Are you excited about that?
Still haven't seen the first one. I don't know why. Something about it just did not appeal to me.
How can you say that you've never seen the first one since it grossed higher than any other movie in all of mankind, in the history of man?
Well, if I recall, Dave, you like to be a contrarian sometimes and just purposefully not see something because it's immensely popular.
Yes.
So I'm sure you can relate to the fact. I mean, for Christ's sakes, watch a Pixar movie. Watch all of them. It just didn't appeal to me. Something about it just – and I like James Cameron a lot. The Abyss is one of my favorite movies of all time, even with all its quirks and shortcomings. But I don't know. Something about it just really did not look that appealing to me.
All right, you can have your taste in movie. You don't have to like and watch everything, I guess, you know. So is anybody on this panel excited about the sequels to Avatar?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy cow, that was definitive. No beating around the bush there. Brad? Brad, I didn't hear you.
I said, yeah, I want to see them, but not overly
excited.
Come on, yeah. Come on. The Na'vi sex scene was hot. It was very hot.
I don't even remember the Na'vi sex scene. Like,
okay. This is like the second or third time that you need to go to Canada.
It's time for you to visit Canada again, Dave.
I'm just saying, or get Cinemax, whatever. But
sign up for Cinemax.
Whatever's easier, I guess. All right, so Avatar, nobody. None of you guys are interested besides Brad, who's kind of interested.
Kinda, yeah.
If it's on Netflix, I might watch it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to catch it. Because, I mean, I didn't see Avatar till years later. And it was only because my friend James was like, you're sitting down and you're watching this.
How is this the highest grossing film if none of you have really watched it? How's that possible?
Because people like you have seen it four times in the theater.
I only saw it once in the theater.
Well, but it was new, right? I mean, Avatar was the first big the big release in this wave of 3D, right? It was the big 3D resurrection. And I think that people went to it for that experience because at the time, remember, before Avatar and before the current 3D that we've been using, it was the red and blue glasses, it was, you know, the really bad polarized, alternating, like, cardboard crap glasses you get, you know, for free at 7-Eleven. And we're in the back of a TV guide. And I think that with Avatar, it was the experience and the novelty of it. Because I remember at the time, not people going, oh, my God, it's the most amazing movie. It was, oh, my God, this is an experience you can only have in theaters. You have to go to the movies and experience this.
Yeah.
Well, I think the difference is, and you with the wave and the vast majority of the 3D films that have come out, the 3D was an afterthought. With Avatar, it was priority. 3D was a part of the experience. It was thought out, it was shot in that particular manner. Iron Man 3 was not. It was fun to watch, it was a good film, but the 3D was not necessary by any means. Whereas with Avatar, it was really a part of the cinematography.
I was going to say, and I've bought into that hype before, you know, where it's, oh my God, you have to see it in 3D. I mean, we saw that recently with Gravity, where everyone's like, you have to see an IMAX 3D. You have to go. It's the experience, man. I bought into that hype with that goddamn Metallica concert film that came out.
Whoa.
All these articles. There were all these articles that were like, you have to see it in 3D on the biggest screen possible. And I think that it's crap a lot of the time, right? I mean, it's complete hype. It's complete fluff. Yes, there's some cool effects. So there's some moments you go, wow. But is it really any more impressive than riding like the new Star Tours at Disneyland when you get down to it? I mean, it's an experience, but I feel like a lot of these movies that it's, oh my God, you have to go have this experience at the theater. That's why you don't watch them at home video. It's why you don't watch it on cable, because once you take away the experience, what's left?
Yeah, I think 3D is dead. I think the way that Cameron's going to really bring people in is if he can master the high frame rate, because Peter Jackson, not so much. It's all right. But, you know, James Cameron is famous for taking technology and bringing it to the next level. He is the Steve Jobs of filmmakers, in my opinion.
Including having, like, a child that he didn't officially recognize for years and hard to work with and, you know, taking credit for other people's ideas, or are we just talking in the general visionary sense?
Wow.
Yeah, James Cameron's a prick. Absolutely, yeah. Flat out. He's an asshole. But, he can make good films.
All right. On that note, let's move on to story number two. Matt, our video game expert on the panel, what do you got? Something video game related.
Yeah, no, I found it's the top 10 anticipated sci-fi video games of 2014. I want to use the term sci-fi video games very loosely. As I know you guys have seen this list. But number 10 is the second installment of Infamous, which I played the first one and didn't care a whole lot for it, so this one just kind of to the wayside for me at least. But it comes out March 21st. Then number 9 is Deep Down.
Okay,
I have no idea.
Matt, wait a second.
Oh,
can you break down a brief description of each of these video games?
That's going to be extensive on the fly internet research, because some of these I really only pay attention to the decent ones, and like The Elder Scrolls is on here, and that's and Brad, you may know a thing or two about some of these, or even Glenn. I don't know if Glenn's a gamer.
Yeah, no, Infamous. Yeah. I mean, I used to be more of a hardcore gamer. I just don't as much anymore. But with Infamous, the concept of Infamous is that it's about a regular guy who gets powers. And what's cool about the game is you could choose to become a good guy or a bad guy. Your notoriety essentially goes in one direction or the other depending on how you behave. So it's got kind of an interesting hook. I don't know. I think that the idea of the story is better than the execution, but I know a lot of people really, really like that series.
Well, wasn't the first one was like one of the first games in which you could choose your direction.
Yeah.
From what I remember. So that was kind of the big thing at the time, but now it's like I believe you play the nephew or the son of the original protagonist, and it's kind of like, yeah. To me, it's like there's really the open world concept is played out, and the choose good or choose bad is not really new, so I don't really care about it anymore.
But yeah, and I remember I played a little bit of the first one, I played a little bit of the second one, and with the third one, I don't think I'd make it past, you know, 2 or 3 hours. It just wasn't dynamic enough for me to really get involved.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. Let's see, moving on. Number 9 is Deep Down. There's not a whole lot about it, other than it is a player perspective game that takes place in New York City in the year 2094. By touching magical artifacts, players are teleported into the distant past to explore dungeons and avoid or battle monsters and seek treasure.
So it takes place in the future, and there's time travel involved, so that's definitely science fiction.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Wait, is it a dystopian future, perhaps?
It really doesn't say it. That was literally the entire plot from Wikipedia.
Glenn, what future is not dystopian, by the way?
I know. It's never been done before.
No. Yeah.
Star Trek isn't dystopian.
That's true. That's very true.
Yes, but everything else. Seriously, Star Trek is the one goddamn franchise where the future actually is the place you'd want to live. And the rest is all, oh, we have flying cars, but people are enslaved from birth, you know, if you're not, like, of the right class. There's always some twist that makes the future suck. So
well,
it'd be nice to see more positive portrayals of the future.
You got to make it interesting somehow, Glenn.
I guess.
I'm not sure there are other ways of making it interesting, though.
That's what she said.
Oh, wah, wah. And moving on.
I had to get one in.
Oh, I get it.
It's
getting boring in the bedroom, so let's try something different and interesting, right? Is that what you're talking about?
dystopian sex life, if you will.
Is this on?
Wow, are we having an adult-themed episode?
Remind me not to drink beer on the podcast again, because I think that's my issue.
Yeah.
You're not as well trained at it as I am.
No, I'm not.
That's right.
Yeah.
Win Matt Stein's liver should be our game.
Get out of here.
This should be around. Just love robots. Yes or no? Yes.
Robots are awesome.
Yay, robots.
Sphincter says what?
Yeah. So, Matt, what is next on the list?
Next on our list is The Elder Scrolls Online. I would consider this to be more of a role-playing game than sci-fi, but I also spent minimal time playing any of the Elder Scrolls game. Dave, you may not know, the Elder Scrolls 5 is Skyrim.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
You've heard of the game Skyrim.
I knew that.
Yeah, that's the last installment of the Elder Scrolls saga,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, it's not science fiction, it's fantasy.
No, exactly. And it just consumed, like, hours of people's lives. But apparently this online game is supposed to span Elder Scrolls 3, 4, and 5, the landscape and characters and stuff like that. I don't know. Like I said, not sci-fi, not something I'm interested in, but will consume the lives of a number of people. It might even end a few relationships.
Highly possible.
Next on the list, though. This is one I'm actually really excited about, and a trailer just came out like 2 days ago. It's called The Order 1886. I believe it's a PlayStation 4 exclusive. but it's takes place in a alternate past London. And the trailer doesn't show you a whole lot other than these guys have like old schoolish looking rifles, but they shoot like laser bolts.
Oh, awesome.
And stuff. And you're fighting these half-breed monsters that are half animal, half man. And it takes place around the 7th or 8th century, where there's a small group of people have taken on like beast-like traits, and then you know there's the people who the uprising essentially. I'm sure if I spent time and like scoured the corners of the internet, I could find out everything there is to know. But it looks really interesting to me, and I don't want to spoil it by getting really balls deep into what is going to happen, because then I think I'll just overhype it for myself. But when this one comes out, which is supposed to be the third quarter of 2014, I fully intend on doing some sort of story for the show on it. But yeah, I got a little nerd chubby there for that one.
Yeah, we want you on the ground, Matt. We want you on the ground getting into the story and reporting back to us the nitty-gritty details of this game.
And when it gets closer, I'd like to update it. So I was happy to see it make the list, as well as a few other that I've some sort of interest in. But next on the list, number 6, is a game called Dying Light. It is a zombie apocalypse themed game, which is also starting to get a little
That's something
overplayed.
New. That's a new genre, right? I mean, there's no other
games. I'm glad somebody finally put zombies in a video game.
Yeah.
It's about time.
Yeah, because video games were lacking zombies. That was the one thing they were lacking, was zombies.
Yeah, it seems to have some sort of similarities to the Left 4 Dead series with some of the characters, but when I first heard about this game, I didn't really know it pertained exclusively to zombies as the enemies. And then when I found that out, I kind of lost my interest in it. That one doesn't even have the release date is unknown, so I'm sure there's a whole lot of development and change that'll happen in that one. But moving on, the next game is the new Tom Clancy game called The Division, which, trying to quickly pull up the Wikipedia page here, I don't know if there's a whole lot about it, but
doesn't it take place in the near future? Like, not too much in the future, where there's cool weapons, but not crazy weapons?
Society has become fragile and complex in the game.
As opposed to the stable, simple world we live in now.
Yes. Here's my favorite part. The game revolves around a disease that spreads on Black Friday in the U.S. and causes a collapse in 5 days.
Oh, perfect. If you're going to spread something, Black Friday is the perfect day for that.
And that's kind of what I like about it, because that's like the perfect time to do something. That's everyone's out and about. There's high interaction rates. You spread some sort of disease, you give it to 1, 2, 3 people, that thing's going to spread pretty quick, assuming they go out shopping.
And the NSA is now tapping your
phone. I know, I was like, hello, NSA. Welcome to our podcast.
Not the first time, not the last
time. More listeners, I don't care.
I know.
We have the government listening to our podcast. Essentially, you play in a group called the Strategic Homeland Division, or The Division for short, that was formed to combat the threat and save what remains in a massive multiplayer online situation.
All right.
So if that's supposed to be the cool aspect, is I think you are forced, I use forced loosely, but you're forced to play with your friends and other people online to...
I love how you said that. Forced to play with your friends.
Yeah.
I don't even like these people.
Forced is social interaction, I guess, which, I mean, who really wants to do that? Next on the list is a game called Thief, which apparently the Thief, there's been a bunch of them, older ones, I guess.
That's kind of an older franchise.
Yes, it looks like the first one came out in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thief, The Dark Project came out in 98, Thief 2 came out in 2000, and then the third one was in 2004, and now this one, 2014, It's a reboot of the original game. Dave loves reboots. But it's more... It falls into the fantasy, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but you just kind of play as a thief in a Victorian and steampunk aesthetic type world.
Glenn, do you have experience with this game? Did you ever play that?
I vaguely remember it. I don't think it was a huge hit, though. I mean, but I remember it existing. Is steampunk sci-fi? Have we ruled on that? Is that...
Well...
No, but the roots of steampunk are in Jules Verne, though. Right? It's the Jules Verne concept of futurism.
Oh, yeah. It qualifies.
Yeah, I need to get my gavel out and judge on this. Yes, it is sci-fi.
Well, Dave likes lasers. Clack. And I don't know if steampunk would really have a whole lot of lasers in it.
Well, I'm not ruling it out as not sci-fi. For now, we'll put it in the sci-fi category.
Fine. Anyways, moving on. This is a game that if none of you have heard of, I will be incredibly surprised. It is currently in beta. It is called Titanfall.
Ah.
I was going to say, if none of you were like, oh yeah, if I heard a whole lot about that recently, I would have been upset.
The name sounds like something that we should know, but obviously it's not.
It is a first-person shooter published by EA, which is kind of the touch of death in video games. It's an online multiplayer only match setup in a war-torn planet, and you fight in a mech-style titan, they call them.
Oh, cool. I love mechs.
I believe it's probably going to be pretty similar to like MechWarrior. I'm sure there's differences. I haven't gotten in the beta, and I won't really care about this game. But apparently, Microsoft uses cloud computing services offboard non-player activity to the servers, which is something new. But a little funny joke for you guys. I use this thing in Chrome called Butt to Cloud. Or excuse me, Cloud to Butt.
Oh, so that's not the funny part. Sorry.
It takes all instances of the words the cloud or cloud and changes it to my butt or butt. So Wikipedia says, the game uses Microsoft's butt computing services. It gets me every time. So if you're in for a good chuckle, and if you read a lot of like sysadmin stuff on the internet, Cloud to Butt is a gem because you'll forget you have it, and then it'll pop up. But I digressed. Titanfall apparently comes out in like 2.5 weeks, March 11th or something. People are talking about it's just insane amounts of fun, and it's really hard to put down. So
cool. All right.
Someday I might go back and play that.
Good sign.
Number two on the list, we're getting close to done here. Watch Dogs, once again, got a lot of publicity. Another game I'm really excited about, so I don't want to do too much digging because I don't want to ruin it, but the general concept is it takes place in an alternate reality version of Chicago. It's kind of a free-roaming, so think kind of Grand Theft Auto-ish, but you're kind of like a hacker guy, so you use like tools and gadgets to hack into phone calls and listen and follow people, and like I believe you could change signs and traffic lights and things like that. So that looks really cool because hacking and security infiltration has always been something I've really been a fan of. That one was first announced like E3 in 2013, so it's been floating around for a while. But apparently the whole point of the game is you play a guy named Pierce, and he helps a fellow hacker named T-Bone escape from jail, I believe, and they discover trying to steal a motherboard, and thus the game begins. And it's supposed to come out between April and June of 2014, and then the last one on the list, sorry for whoever I made yawn.
It's just been a long day.
No.
Watch Dogs, I feel like that's been hyped for such a long time at this point.
Well, and that's the thing, and that's also, you know, when these games get hyped, it's like, yeah, there's this game coming out. And, like, when they announced it in 2013, it's like, this game is going to be the kiddies' titties. And then they're like, well, you know, it'll be out sometime in 2014, and it's like, you know, mid-2013, and it's like, well, there's really no sense in getting super excited for it, because you got to wait, like, a year. And that's kind of my thoughts on, like, with probably with you guys in movies where it's like, oh, you know, they announced all these actors for this,
no,
this movie.
No, no. That's not
Are you
how
kidding
it works.
Me? So, like, you're excited for what the hell? What's the movie we just talked about?
The Guardians of the Galaxy? That one?
No.
Oh, Avatar.
Avatar. And it's like, oh, Avatar 2 is coming out in December of 2016. And it's like, how can you get excited for something that comes out 2 years from now?
Well, it depends on the movie. If it's like a Star Trek sequel, definitely. Star Wars sequel, yeah. But not just a regular. If it's got a cool concept, then yeah, I'd be really excited for it.
I've been really excited for the Sin City sequel, which they announced in like 2012, and it comes out sometime this year. So it's like, I get excited for it, then I forget it exists. And then I'll, like, revisit it at some point.
And then you get excited all over again.
Yeah, that's the best thing. That's actually the best thing, right? I mean, it's like, I think, like, oh, my God, there's going to be new Star Wars movies. And then, like, I'll forget about that for a while. And then when I remember again, it's like, oh, my God, there's going to be new Star Wars movies. You know? It's good, I think, to not be counting the days. Because as Tom Petty said, waiting is indeed the hardest part.
Yeah, yeah. He's a wise man, that Tom Petty.
Wow. I'm sure he said a lot of things. Yeah, last game on the list, it's called Destiny. It is I believe it's a first-person shooter. Yeah, action role-playing first-person shooter in a mythic science fiction open-world setting.
Oh, yeah.
It's developed by Bungie, so I think a lot of people are really excited because Bungie did Halo. I don't know if they've really done anything since, but the premise is that it is set 700 years into the future in a post-apocalyptic setting.
There he goes,
following man. A prosperous period of exploration.
So there was a non dystopian future for a while, but then it went to crap again, and we went back to dystopian.
But yeah, that's that pretty much sums it up for the top 10 anticipated video games of 2014.
All right, good job. Matt
and yet, there's still no video game based on The Hunger Games. Still.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That surprises me.
Yeah, because it lends itself to a video game, especially a multiplayer, like, arena deathmatch game. I cannot think of a fictional property that is, at least in the last 10 years, that has lended itself as well to a video game as The Hunger Games, and nothing.
Maybe they're working on it. Maybe they didn't realize how big it was going to be until it got big, and then they're like, oh, we better start working on a game.
I think it was maybe the idea of kids killing each other in a video game that kind of turned some people off.
Yes.
That's probably why it was seen as a hot button issue.
There's apparently a Hunger Games online game.
Oh, is it the one that the fan made one, or is it the Facebook one? I mean, there's like a kind of a cheat.
I'm going to guess it's probably the fan made one because it took me to the hungergames.co.uk.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a fan made one. Oh, that fan is trying to do it. But I mean, I think that EA or Ubisoft, someone could have just printed money doing this game.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Hey, speaking of printing money, probably what's going to turn out to be one of the biggest movies of the year is Guardians of the Galaxy. And the trailer came out this week. We were excited last episode about it. And Brad, you're going to break it down for us, right?
Yes, I am. So, Guardians of the Galaxy. There's been a big hype right now, and they've just released a full trailer, and they've also released individual smaller pieces now that highlight the individual main characters of Guardians of the Galaxy. So we're going to talk about the individual characters and why you should care. The first character is Peter Quill, who is played by Chris Pratt of Parks and Rec. The character Peter Quill in recent comics, they've kind of revamped him a little bit. He was born on Earth, so he is a human, but he had an alien father. And his father is a part of the royal family of the race called the Spartax. His father crash landed on Earth and had an affair with Peter Quill's mother, who was later killed by alien assassins.
That's hot.
Really?
Holy crap, Dave.
I had to fit it in one more time. Just one more time. Okay, Brad, continue.
Okay. I'm afraid I'm going to say something. And then the puppy was killed. That's hot.
No, of course not.
Okay. The next character is Gamora, and she is portrayed by Zoe Saldana. She played Uhura in Star Trek, but she was
Avatar.
The Losers, one of my favorite comic book movies, or not one of my favorite, but it's on the list. Her character, Gamora, is described as the most dangerous woman in the universe. She's a killer, an assassin for hire, and she's the last survivor of her race. Her people were all wiped out by the Badoon, which are a nasty group of aliens who also killed Star-Lord's mother. In the comics, she was adopted by the villain Thanos, who we saw at the end of the Avengers film, and he had her trained to be an assassin.
Wow. Okay.
Next up is Drax the Destroyer, and he is portrayed by the wrestler Dave Bautista.
Okay, that's my new name. That's my new name for this show. I'm going to be the Destroyer. Dave the Destroyer.
Dave the Destroyer.
Yes.
It's good to be the king.
Yes.
And he is the muscles of the group. Basically, imagine the Incredible Hulk only slightly smarter. He's the brute force, and he is a berserker fighter. So once he gets angry and in a fight, he just doesn't stop. Next up is the character that a lot of people have been kind of scratching their heads about, like, how is this going to work? And that is Rocket Raccoon. And in the original comics, Rocket Raccoon was a cybernetic / genetic experiment on a lower life form. And he originally appeared back in the 70s. In The Incredible Hulk, actually. And in one of the comics, Rocket lives on a planet full of talking animals, and he crewed a spaceship called the Rackan Ruin. Along with his first mate, get this, Walrus.
Walrus, yes.
I see what they did there.
And oddly enough, he was a talking walrus. I'm sure you didn't guess that.
Didn't see that coming.
And they protected an all-powerful Gideon Bible from space marauders. Okay, I'm not taking any questions on that one.
That's
we're moving
a
on.
Weird story.
Oh, come on.
All right, Groot. Groot is basically an extraterrestrial plant monster who's almost impossible to kill. And the reason why he's impossible to kill is if there's any piece of him left, he can actually regrow from that piece.
And,
left.
Let me interject, Brad, in the trailer, Groot is protecting Rocket Raccoon from bullets.
Yes, the two of them work together. Let's see. Oh, yeah, the joke right now on the internet is DC's, we don't think people are ready for a Wonder Woman movie, and Marvel's, we've got a movie with a raccoon with a machine gun riding on a talking tree. They're part of a duo, and the only thing that he can say that humans understand is, I am Groot, but actually in his native, if you could actually understand his language, it's actually far more intricate, and he's actually saying more than that, but it's just, other people don't know the language, so that's really all they can hear and understand out of it.
So was there ever like a universal translator in
the
universe?
Okay. There was an issue where they did run it through a translator, and he was like extremely eloquent.
Did he have a British accent?
I don't think they went with the British accent, but he was far more elegant, and there was a lot more going on than what you hear.
Okay, so Brad, you've talked about the heroes in Guardians of the Galaxy. Do you want to talk about the villains who they'll be fighting in this movie?
Absolutely. First up is going to be Nebula. And Nebula is being played by Karen Gillan, who is a former alum from Doctor Who. She played Amy Pond. And she is going to be a blue-skinned alien, essentially. And she, in the comics, the character that she portrays is a space pirate, and she's a killer. She, you know, she's a kind of a dual-wielding knife fighter, and she takes advantage of people who, like, screw up and uses their screw-ups to kind of take power for herself and get herself a better deal, as it were. She also claims to be the granddaughter of Thanos, and Thanos actually punished her for lying by actually turning her into some kind of evil cyborg zombie kind of a creature. I mean, she still looks human, but she's got like a cyber arm and
yeah, her face is kind of messed up. It looks
a little bit like in the comics. I mean, she had like severe burns on her face and she was looking pretty rough towards the last few points that I actually was reading Marvel Comics and I saw her. So, the other character, I mean, there are a couple other characters, but the other one that we definitely know about is the Collector. And we saw the Collector character at the end of the credits of Thor 2, The Dark World. And he is portrayed by Benicio del Toro. And we see him get the ether, collect it from Sif and... Oh, I can't remember the other dude. Anyways, two of Thor's pals, and he's going to hold on to it, but it looks like he's actually collecting. The ether is one of six Infinity Gems for the gauntlet.
Brad, you're really pulling out your nerd cards here.
Yeah, well, you know. if you got it, flaunt it. We saw the Infinity Gauntlet at the end of, or I'm sorry, not at the end of, but in the first Thor film, when they walk through the vault area in Asgard, and there's like little trinkets kind of off to the sides of the long hallway that they walk through, but you see the Infinity Gauntlet just for a brief moment. And the gauntlet itself is fairly innocuous, but once you start to slot in the six gems, once you get them all in place, you actually have total control of reality itself.
Total control over reality itself? Holy crap.
Yes, exactly.
I
know,
that.
You're freaking out too, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, that's kind of the rundown of why you should care about these particular characters, what they're about, and... it looks like this film is going to be pretty darn cool.
The trailer looks awesome. I love the use of, what song was that? Hooked on a Feeling, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's got enough humor, I think, that people will like it. And that was a great primer for Guardians of the Galaxy, Brad. You informed, educated, and made us excited about this movie.
And we're probably going to get some dated music. Like, Hooked on a Feeling is from, like, you know, the late 70s. Peter Quill actually kind of leaves the Earth at that time period. So he's actually got a Sony Walkman that's got his cassette of music that he listens to, and that kind of grounds him and reminds him that he is from Earth.
That's sweet.
So
that's sweet.
That's kind of a big deal for him.
All right.
So does this movie take place, like, in the present, the future?
Yes, it takes place in the present.
Okay.
But he leaves the Earth in the late 70s, early 80s.
And obviously, Matt, you can come back to Earth and not age because of the whole... because you're
time
still,
difference?
Yeah, time difference. Wow. Yeah.
Essentially, it's a time difference, yeah, because a year here is shorter than a year on a planet with a further... equidistant radial lateris to the sun's dorsimus upper.
Gluteus maximus.
Maximus.
That's some big language.
Finicus.
All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to the next story. We're talking Norman Reedus. We're talking Walking Dead star moving on to a movie, right, Inessa?
I don't know what you're talking about. No. Yeah, Norman Reedus is who plays Daryl on The Walking Dead. He is set to work with Robert Kirkman again. Robert Kirkman's got this sci-fi thriller called Air that he's going to be working on. And Reedus is going to be joining Digimon Honsu, who played Horus in Stargate, I believe, the movie.
Mm-hmm. And he's actually...
And I believe he's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he plays something the Pursuer. I can't remember the... it's not actually something the Pursuer, but...
I think it's Glenn the Pursuer, actually.
Yes. It's Bob the Pursuer. Yep. Okay, moving on.
So, yeah, it's going to be a low-budget film, and it's going to center on a set of survivors living in an underground cryogenic facility after a nuclear fallout has decimated the Earth.
Hey, would you classify that as a dystopian future?
Oh, come on.
No. Duh. Our two leads that have been cast are the two custodial workers who keep the cryogenically sleeping personnel alive. Their goal is to reestablish society once the fallout has cleared, though things might not go that great for them as the two start having issues keeping themselves sane while also maintaining the fragile environment that is keeping everyone alive. So that actually sounds potentially entertaining.
It sounds interesting. I mean, I could see, you know, Robert Kirkman's look to the things that he produces, I think, is perfect for this kind of movie.
Right. I think it's something that would work. I mean, we've already seen movies where you mainly have like two or three characters throughout the entire film, and it works. So
look at Moon. That was one character, basically.
Yeah, and then you have Gravity, which was primarily two.
Mm-hmm.
God, Moon was such a good movie.
Yeah.
I have not seen Moon. It's one that I want to see.
Gotta see
it. I own
Inessa.
It.
Yay!
That's handy that you guys are going to be living together. Huh?
Boom.
So.
There was, speaking of movies with minimal characters, it's not a sci-fi movie. It was actually a giant piece of shit, but it was Ryan Reynolds in a box in the ground for an hour and a half. I can't remember what it was called, but it was one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
It was called Ryan Reynolds in a Box.
Yes, I remember that now.
Better than Richard in a Box?
It's, man, I'm going to look it up real quick.
Okay.
I caught your joke, Inessa.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now that you caught it, I caught it.
So, apparently...
Buried! Sorry.
Buried.
Yeah.
So, apparently this movie had a different title. It used to be called Wake Cycle, and they've renamed it to Air. And it's co-written by Christian Cantamessa, who's, I guess, done some of the writing for Red Dead Redemption, which is a pretty cool
game.
Manhunt, and then... It's also co-written by Chris Pacetto, who did the How I Survived the Zombie Apocalypse. And it'll be Cantamessa's full-length directorial debut. So.
Cool. So it sounds like it's totally up his alley. Like he, like this is the kind of thing that he does. It's his thing. Thang.
Totally up his stuff.
What? What?
But not up the chuff.
What? Wait. What? Hey, is there any more details on this? Like a release date? Probably too early in the process, right?
I haven't really seen anything about potential release dates yet. Probably a couple years, 2016, perhaps.
Okay.
See that whole thing we talked about before? You get all pumped to see this movie, and then it's.
It's one of those things. I'll probably end up forgetting about it.
But then again,
living in life. Where you don't know about anything that's upcoming. If you just went through life and literally, like, you avoided all coming attractions, you avoided all internet gossip, and literally it was just like, you know, what's planned today? And you'd be like, you know, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy, that sounds good. I haven't really heard anything about it, but, you know, I'm going to go check it out. I think people's, I don't know, maybe that delayed gratification, like your mind would just be blown on a constant basis because you get to experience it all at once, you know? And I'd even go further and say, so we remove previews, we remove marketing, and we even take out the opening credits. So you get that thing going, this guy's in this movie? Oh, my God, this is incredible. You know, and you could just have that like joy overcome you. Essentially,
see,
I think it would change everything.
I kind of like the way he thinks.
Yeah,
let's do a.
And honestly, I when it comes to movies that I'm interested in, or am getting somewhat excited about, I only watch maybe the first maybe two trailers, and then that's it. Because to me, they really give away like half the movie in these trailers, and then there's no surprise. I'm either disappointed if what I expect to happen doesn't happen in the way that I want it to happen or that it was implied, or it's like, oh man, this is going to be awesome, and then it's like a big letdown.
We should do let's do a reality series or web series about a person like that is shut off from all like media and then expose him to things that normal people would have known about. That
like pornography?
I want to know who's the guy that sees the trailers for that stuff and is just like, oh, man, I'm looking at the trailer. Looked really good. Did you see the trailer? They won up there.
Hey, Dave, did you see the trailer for that new Booty Talk 11?
No.
Looks like a real gem.
No. Thank God. Thank
Busty
God.
Redhead.
But I think the thing, and I don't know if people still have this experience because you can't really have this experience with Netflix anymore. Or with Netflix and with the way that we consume media on demand. But I miss the experience of flipping channels and stumbling upon a movie and you just leave it on and then it draws you in. And you're like, oh my God, this is an amazing movie. I knew nothing about it ahead of time. I had no clue where it was going. Everything that was a surprise was a genuine surprise. There's no stumble upon discovery of media when we have to choose what we want to watch to stream.
And choosing, you know? And choosing is the worst part because there's so many choices that it takes you forever to find something that you really, really want to watch. And by that time, you're like, oh, my God, finally I found something.
It's replaced it. I know, Dave, I think we talked about this in Spreecast before, but I've had probably a dozen dates in my life or hanging out with the girlfriend nights where we never made it out of the video store with something to watch. The entire time was spent in the video store having spirited discussions about, I don't feel like this, I've seen that. Wait, what do you mean you've never seen this movie? You have to watch this movie. We're going home right now and you're watching this movie. And they're like, oh, some other time. I'm like, no, tonight we're watching Heat. It's 3 hours long, but you'll love it. You know, and I think that's the thing. So I've had that replaced by Netflix dates, like evenings at home where it's literally like, what do you want to watch on Netflix? How about this? How about this? How about this? And you get in the same arguments. And that's the thing. It's like, I think there's something to be said for the passive watching experience of literally just sort of, submitting to the whims of cable operators.
Well, here's what you do to replace that. You find a bunch of movies that you might want to watch, put them into a hat, and then when it comes to movie night, you just pull one out and go, oh,
that's
we're watching.
That's too much choice.
No, or what you could
choice,
do.
Because then you go, oh, I don't want to watch that one.
What you could do is just, if you're going to go onto Netflix, you can just close your eyes and scroll and then click. And whatever plays, you watch.
Well, there's and I don't know if it's on any of like the Roku boxes and stuff, but it's on my PlayStation. The Netflix has this thing called Max, and it'll take like movies that you have reviewed and kind of pick and choose what it thinks you might want to watch. So you'll open it and it'll say, hey, what are you in the mood for, a documentary or a comedy? You pick one of the two, and then it'll pitch you a bunch of movies. Or there's like an I'm Feeling Lucky where it'll just decide what it thinks you'll want to watch and just give it to you.
I think that's the closest. That's the closest thing
to
what Glenn's. Yeah.
I think it needs to start at post credits. So at that point, you have no choice but to watch it to figure out even what you're watching.
See, I kind of like that though, because there's been a number of times where my wife and I have tried to do it, and it's like, hey, let's watch this movie, and it's like, nah, it really doesn't sound that interesting. So let's try another one, and then you spend, like Glenn said, you know, hours trying to find something to watch, and you ultimately watch nothing.
Yeah.
All right, let's leave it on Glenn then, and wrap up this sucker with you got a pretty interesting another movie trailer, right? Or another
Not a trailer, a casting announcement for the Fantastic Four reboot that Fox is doing because they don't want to let the rights revert back to Marvel, so Marvel can do it properly in the Marvel universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I gotta say, the two Fantastic Four movies we saw before, with the exception of Chris Evans as the Human Torch, were, I mean, just, I'm trying to think of a single other redeeming quality about them. The second one, especially with the Silver Surfer, was terrible. So now we're getting the reboot, but it's directed by the director of Chronicle, which that excites me a lot, because I think Chronicle was one of the better films. For me, that was unexpected. I didn't really have expectations going to Chronicle. That was a great superhero story. It was different. It was original. But we have the cast announced, which includes Miles Teller, who, you know, has been in a ton of stuff lately, as Reed Richards. It's a younger cast. What's-Her-Face from House of Cards is the Invisible Woman. The kid from Billy Elliot, playing Ben Grimm, as the Thing. And then in somewhat of a controversial casting choice, a post-racial choice of Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch.
Now, wait a second, Glenn. Is he actually confirmed as that character? Because Michael B. Jordan, his name has popped up in attached to a lot of movies, but nothing definite.
No, this is the thing. Variety is pretty certain on this, and what's funny about it is we've heard rumors about this. We have the director denying some of these casting rumors, but all of these names were in contention. Michael B. Jordan's been officially attached, from what I understand, for quite some time.
Okay.
He was the one everyone – I've been hearing for a year that Michael B. Jordan was playing the Human Torch. And I think it makes sense. I mean, in Chronicle, he was great at doing a confident – a little bit of a cocky character. He was great on Friday Night Lights, great on The Wire, obviously, you know, where a lot of people first discovered him. I mean, I'm trying to think of – I actually think he's one of those actors that everything he does, he's good in. Even when the movie is not very good, I think he is very good in it. And I think it's a very interesting choice for the Human Torch. And in a way, I don't mean to make too much of it in terms of a post-racial thing, but, you know, remember all the controversy, all the discussion when Donald Glover wanted to audition for this Amazing Spider-Man reboot, you know, and in this case, we have the director just deciding this is the guy I think is best for the role, and he's who's getting it. And some people are like, oh, how are you going to explain that Johnny Storm and Sue Storm are brother and sister? You know, is it an adoption angle? How are you going to have that when you have one, the actress that's Caucasian and him that's African-American? But I think he's a really interesting choice for the role, and I'm really excited about it. And I think Miles Teller, you know, Reed Richards is a boring-ass character. But Miles Teller, if you saw The Spectacular Now, or, you know, he's one of those actors as well. Even in the Footloose remake where he played the Chris Penn role, I thought he was the best thing about that movie. So I think that they're actually going with some, this isn't blockbuster casting necessarily in terms of just going for the most marketable name. I think that this is actually Fox trying to, you know, they're agreeing to back who might be the most interesting actor or actress for the role.
Do we know anything about the story?
It's going to be a reboot.
Okay.
It's going to be same thing we saw 10 years ago. They go to space, there's radiation, they come back, they get powers.
So, Brad...
I'm kind of upset that they're not going with the Marvel, with the Ultimates story.
Well, no, they are. They said it will be the Ultimates, because they're younger. So it will be the Ultimate. Fantastic.
No, but I mean the Ultimates, how they get their powers. It wasn't radiation.
What was it then? Because I did read
it. It was Reed Richards was working on... checking for pocket dimensions, other universes.
Oh, that's right.
And there was the explosion, and they were basically shifted in their forms from different universes, different versions of themselves, essentially.
I'll have to read that again. I don't know if they're going into space, but it is an origin story.
So I think, I'm thinking they're probably going to do Ultimates then. That sounds like it. I mean,
they're younger.
Yeah, and why do the – yeah, it makes sense, because if you were younger, you would not be an astronaut. And why do the same story all over again that you did 10 years ago?
I don't know. Why did we do that with Spider-Man? Why are we going to do that with Batman again in the span of it's the cycle that we're in now. Because, the companies don't want to lose the rights. So you go original, sequel, and then when that drops off, you wait a couple of years and then reboot it, you know, repeat the process.
I wish they were that high on doing that for a property like Star Trek. I mean, sure, they're doing the movies, but there's not a TV series on site or in sight, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
Agreed.
Any final thoughts on any of these stories? On Glenn's, on Brad's, on Matt's, on Anessa's, or mine, or...
Totally not related to the story, but it was about...
Oh, I can't wait for this.
About yeah. Matt and the add-on for Chrome for Cloud to Butt. That he mentioned, I think, of the other earlier. Yeah, it's awesome. He showed me a link to Reddit, and there's one with Oracle, and it says, reimagine your business in my butt. Because the Cloud to Butt basically changes...
Brad, show that butt. Again, Brad. I got you up now. What is that?
Oh, it came!
Oh, man. Sorry.
Wow.
So the shirt says...
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, we are an audio podcast, aren't we?
It says, when you want to have a serious conversation about Green Lantern, you know my email address.
But I don't know your email address.
I don't
address,
know
and
either.
I do want to have a serious conversation about Green Lantern.
First off, I call BS on that. Second off, you don't want to have a serious conversation about Green Lantern.
So are we...
You know what? I bet there is a Green Lantern pornography parody that I want to talk about.
Are we supposed to know the email address, Brad?
No.
Oh. Okay.
It's actually from an Onion article from, gosh, like about 10 years ago.
You know, one thing I want to say, we talked about this earlier before we had a little technical difficulty, but I think Guardians of the Galaxy looks just insane. And I said it before, but, you know, it's like, Marvel is essentially doing like Howard the Duck with a machine gun with Rocket Raccoon. And I like that this is just really crazy. And it could go horribly wrong, but it looks like it's going to be a fun movie. And props to them if they could pull off something so high concept and have it succeed. Because we don't see sci-fi like that, like Buckaroo Banzai anymore. You know, I mean, sort of just fun, spirited sci-fi. It doesn't look, you know, dystopian in the least. I mean, it looks like a fun, fun movie. And I think we have... when's the last time there was really a fun sci-fi movie?
Yeah, it's been a while. It has been a while. Good point. Very good point.
Yep.
I think they're going to do... I think Rocket Raccoon's going to do really well if he stays serious the entire time. And that's his character too, right, Brad? He's not goofy at all?
Well, I mean, there are... He has slightly goofy moments, but, I mean, he's got anger issues, you know? He's a tiny raccoon that has a gun. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap her up then. Before we do get out of here, a couple of notes of interest. You can make contact with us. You can email us. Give us feedback by emailing galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Got a voicemail number. That is 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966, and our website is galacticnetcast.com. Go there for links to our social networks, the subscription page, all that. You can search for us on Stitcher, on iTunes, and anywhere else where podcasts are located. And let's thank again our guest geek, Mr. Glenn Rubenstein. Thanks for joining us, Glenn.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yay!
Yeah.
Thanks, Glenn.
Where can people find you on the internet?
They can follow me at Twitter, at Glenn Rubenstein. It's GlennRubenstein.
Are you in charge of the twit.tv social networks? Like when?
Yeah, I oversee that. That's
okay.
Correct.
So when you see a tweet or something on Facebook about Twit, that's you that's behind it, right?
Ultimately, yes.
Okay.
Yes, a twit tweet.
Yes. That's going to do it, and I call this meeting of the Sci-Fi Geek Club to a close. Thanks for listening. Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.